So, hi everybody, welcome along to Tuesday morning, isn't it? Welcome to Tuesday morning, our Karma class, and those of you online, I'm glad to hear. So, our class is made up of a number of components. We begin by setting our motivation, and there's a visualization and prayers. Then we begin the actual class, and in the class itself, there's a part where I've left open for questioning, and then we do a meditation. And the class is basically made up of two major sections. Let's begin. So it's important that you are comfortable in your seat. This requires that your sort of back be straight and your shoulders be relaxed, that your hands are in a comfortable position, and your head should be sitting evenly upon your neck, and your eyes can be shut, open, or just partially close, whatever suits you. When you are sitting comfortably, just allow your body to breathe itself. And feeling the body breathe itself. Just relax into awareness. From within the state of awareness, you will know that you are breathing. You'll also know that you can hear sounds of passing traffic. This is just the nature of awareness. So you are relaxed into your natural state of awareness. Imagine the ground beneath you. It's made of a starry sapphire light, and it's as soft as a cloud. The space above you is filled with rainbows and offerings made of light. Directly in front of you, in space, a throne appears. On that throne is a lotus. Upon the lotus is the sun and moon sitting flat like a cushion. And sitting on that moon seat is the Buddha Shakyamuni. And he's golden in color, wearing the three robes of a monk. His left hand, he holds a bowl, and in the right hand, he's touching the moon seat. Surrounding the Buddha is a great assembly of other enlightened beings, the bodhisattvas and deities, protectors. So this will happen in the space above you. Follow the starry sapphire ground that your feet are resting upon, soft as a cloud, are all sentient beings. These include your parents, friends and family, people you've had misunderstandings and difficulties with, and strangers. And you recollect how fortunate you are to still be alive. And while you are alive, you have the leisure and opportunity to attain any type of spiritual goal that you set for yourself. Now, the goals of Buddhist spiritual practice are renunciation, the mind of enlightenment, the correct view, and liberation and enlightenment. So if you wish to achieve any of these goals, you'll need to act quickly. But things are not quite right. And the world doesn't exist as it seems to. While this is the case, nevertheless, you have met a spiritual friend who's doing his very best to lead you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones. The Buddha, the teacher of this spiritual path, the Dharma, which is the path itself and the true cessations it produces, in the spiritual community of beings who have actually entered the path. So in front of all sentient beings and the enlightened beings, we want to make our practice as purely as possible. So to do that, we can imagine ourselves to be as clear as a deity. Meaning this body that you presently have is utterly transformed into a nature of something like a soap bubble. It's completely clear, but it's sort of luminescent. And while having this body, you're holding a vajra and a bell, symbolizing wisdom and skillful means. And you're sitting within a sphere of great bliss. So with a wish to lead all beings to the safety of the refuge that the Three Jewels provides, you say in front of all the Buddhas, the Bodhisattvas, and enlightened beings, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. In response to this aspiration of ours, think that from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectars stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all living beings surrounding you. All of our negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Our lifespan, our health, our virtues and Dharma realizations are increased. So being cleansed by wisdom and fortified with compassionate love, take the moment to recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. Then decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings in these four immeasurable states. To affirm this, join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the bias of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. In response to this aspiration, again, from the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down, and these dissolve into yourself and all living beings. And all negative karmas and obstructions are purified. And your health, lifespan, virtues and realizations are increased. So feeling fortified, exhale and relax. And from that relaxed state of awareness, just invite the field for accumulated merit to appear. And they do. And in front of them, you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions, accumulated since beginning this time, and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great and mighty Buddha. So having purified our body, speech and mind somewhat and accumulated a portion of wisdom, to prevent ourselves from losing that or contaminating it, but grasping at them to truly exist, we imagine our body, speech and mind our merits, all of our enjoyments are utterly transformed into a pure land. And we offer this land to the Buddha as a cause for us to have a pure environment to teach others when we attain enlightenment. And we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. The offering's been released. It's been accepted by the Buddha, and the Buddha now looks down and smiles at you. And you look up into the eyes of the Buddha, meeting his gaze. You find acceptance, great compassion, humility, and wisdom. And under the gaze of the Buddha, you recollect renunciation, the bodhicitta, and the correct view. And you aspire to be a Buddha, a fully awakened being, effortless wisdom, compassion, and power. Now, induced by your wishes and prayers, there emerges from the Guru Buddha a second figure which absorbs into you. And by your form, your body clearly becomes that of a Guru Buddha. Radiating from your heart, light rays strike all sentient beings surrounding you, and they place them in the state of a Guru Buddha. So now you and all utterly transformed sentient beings are the same. You are all fully awakened, enlightened. And the sound of the Buddha's enlightenment and path radiate throughout space. And you join in saying, Tayata Muni Muni Mahamudaya Sambhava. Tayata Muni Muni Mahamudaya Sambhava. Tayata Muni Muni Mahamudaya Sambhava. I think that the path of its results were established in the minds of all beings. And so the two purposes are achieved. So you also recognize that this has been an exercise in imagination. Nevertheless, it has imprinted the mind with a virtue. I think that through this virtue that we've created, may each of us quickly achieve the state of the Guru Buddha and place all sentient beings without exception into that very same state. And then breathing in through your nostrils, exhale through your mouth, lift your eyes quite open, and move your limbs. That's the proper position so you feel quite comfortable in this. Okay, so let's have a look at what we've covered already. So last week we looked at physical and verbal karma. We looked at primarily what the results of creating these actions are. We know that there are three primary results. One was called fruition, the other was called cosmic concordant, and the other was called environmental. So in other words, when we create actions with our body, speech, or mind, there are consequences of those actions. And those consequences often take place in the future. One of those future results will be a rebirth. So we find ourselves in this lifetime reborn as human beings. So that's the result of virtue. While we are here, we are creating all sorts of other actions with our body, speech, and mind. And they're also going to produce effects later on. One of them will be another rebirth. This type of result is called a fruitional result. It's like the fruit. You have a seed, it's caused, and you have the fruit. Our fruit is right now to be human beings. And those especially these results of fruition, rebirth, require a complete action. And that complete action has a number of different parts, and they're explained in different ways. So the most common way is to just explain in three parts. So just say, look, you have an intention, then you act, and then the act finishes. That's the three parts. But it's explained in four parts, I say, yeah, well, you have, when you act against something. You have a basis. So often we act with sentient beings. There's an intention for that action. There's the action itself, and then there's the culmination. That's three, right? Four. When you go to the text, they even explain it. Six and seven, it just gets bigger and bigger. And it just means you're just going into more detail. We'll talk about some of the detail in today's class as we're talking about mental karma. We looked at the four karmic principles. So this is the most, when you walk away from here, I would like you to take knowledge of that away, because every time you go to a teacher on karma, the teacher will always talk about the four karmic principles. Well, the first one is that karma is certain. So what does that mean? Somebody tell me what the certainty of karma means. Yeah, but I want to be more specific. Yeah, karma is definite. What is definite? What is definite? No, it doesn't mean that. In this first point, that's not what it means. No. Okay, this is what you got, this is what you got to take away. This is what is certain about karma, or what is definite about karma. Good causes create good effects. Bad causes create bad effects. Effect follows cause. That always, it is never ever the case that a bad action creates a good result. What is definite is good causes create good results. That is what you need to take away in terms of definite. So again, so we ask you this question. This happened a while back, and I was quite shocked because I knew the woman who asked this question had been coming to Buddhist classes for about 15 years. And she asked the question, I said, you've got to be kidding. That's Buddhism 101. That's what we get taught straight away, right? It's not definite that a result will follow a cause, because you can interfere with it. Right? That's the point of purifying the mind, you interfere. What is definite is that good produces good, bad produces bad. Non-virtue produces suffering, virtue produces happiness. That is definite. So please take that one away. Right? Yes, of course, the cause is always previous to the effect. Causes always come before effects. Yeah, of course, causes always come before effects. So something we could have done yesterday, we might have experienced it today. We might experience it 10 years later. We might experience it in another lifetime. We'll come to that. We'll talk about that again today, because we talked about last week. When we talk about these effects, so remember, karma means cause. When you deal with karma, you're talking about causes. And I said when we began this course, the major problem with us in the West is we're always looking at the effect. That's not karma. That's the effect of a karma. The karma is intention, the action of intention. That's what's really important here. Now, from that intention, from that cause, effects will follow. Is it certain that an effect will always follow? No. Just like you can give you an example before having a seed. The effect of the seed will be something very much like that seed, right? You have a cherry seed, you get a cherry tree. That's the effect. You never get plums. But that's what's definite about karma. Good follows good. Suffering follows the bad. That's what's definite about it. It's not that effects always follow causes, because you can have the seed of a tomato, that plant, right? Is it certain that that seed will produce a tomato? Is it definite? You say no, why not? I'm not going to plant it. Simple, I'm not going to get any tomatoes from the seed. If I smash it, break it apart, it's not going to produce any tomatoes. So that's not what's definite about it. It's definite that if this tomato seed meets all the right conditions, it's going to produce tomatoes. It will not produce grapes. That is what's certain about karma. So we take this idea, like I'm using, and this is how it's presented in the text. I often use the agricultural examples, right? Seeds and plants. And it's easy, as you can see. What's it mean in terms of mental karma or physical or verbal karma? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today, Ruby. So we talked about physical and verbal karma last week. Today we're going to be talking about mental karma. So please, somebody tell me, how do we relate this example to our lives? Yep, so that's behavior. So that's a behavioral effect. Yeah, that's right. So in terms of, so somebody tell me an example of a good karma. Could be very speech or action.
To help an old lady walk across the street.
You help an old lady to cross the street. What is the effect of that for you?
You get helped and turn.
You get something good happen to you. Right? If your intention to help that woman across the street was one of virtue, it's an act of kindness, right? You're not trying to mislead her or anything, because that could be your intention to take her across the street, couldn't it? So it's not the physical action, it's the intention. So this example that Mel's given, your intent to help this woman cross the street safely. That's your intention, right? What's the effect for you? Yeah. And in terms of, like, say, which we, what I'm trying to get has, through that activity, your result can only be a good one. If your intention was one of kindness, you meet kindness later on in your life. That's the effect. Kindness follows kindness. The intention was one of kindness. The effect must be one of kindness. But this is what you've got to sort of get into your whole being. So whenever you want to help people, you want to be kind. Why? Because it's going to affect you. It's a great result for you. It's a good result for the person too, that you help across the street, no doubt about it. But you want good effects for yourself. The karma is the intention. This intention doesn't go across the other woman. It stays with you. You want to nourish it. You want to make it grow. You want to make great effects. And you will, and the effects will be similar to the cause. That's what's certain. If you decide to take this woman across the road because you intend to rob her, now what's the effect of that? Yes, she got across the road. You have to experience a result similar to your intention, right? If your intention is to steal her wealth, the result of that will be you will lose wealth. This is what's certain about karma. The good follows the good, the bad follows the bad. Got to try and take these little stories like this and then apply them to yourself. Otherwise, you won't do it. It'd be so interesting. I mean, and we are sitting amongst people we all like. That's true. But unless you apply it, you won't get the effects. So what karma is, it's the intention, intentions and causes. I said in the West, we often think it's effects, or else we think of, you hear that term instant karma. Well, karma can happen pretty instantly, but it's very, very rare, and the action has to be one of immense kindness and greatness or terrible thing. And it's rare. So most times the effects of anything you do take place later on. They're like the thing with the seed, right? You put it in the ground, you don't turn around, there's the plant. Right? It takes quite a bit of time before you get a plant. It's the same with us. It takes time. Well, it takes time. You have to meet the conditions, and many times the conditions aren't there. But just having a cause is not enough. You know, it's like having, like I said, the tomato seed in the packet. Does that ensure that you're going to get tomatoes? You go, no way. I need sunlight, soil, water, a lot of favorable conditions, time, and I'll get tomatoes. It's the same with us. These actions, causes, are called seeds. Seeds in their mind, they're waiting to come to fruition. And they come to fruition in different ways. One is a rebirth, one is in your behavior, another is experience, the other is your environment. But it all takes time.
Could it also take time? Because right now we're already in the process of being in the effects of something, so that kind of has to finish before the next effect can arise. I don't know if this is speculation.
We do need causes are not enough. Causes require conditions to produce effects. This is what we've looked at before. Again, I'm saying karma is quite not an easy topic to get your head around, that's for sure. I think it's much more difficult than emptiness, myself. But these four karmic principles, you know, we've got to get that down. It's, when you say karma is certain, nearly everybody naturally goes, it's certain that you get an effect from a cause. That's not what's being said here. It's certain good causes produce good effects. Bad causes produce bad effects. That's what's certain. Never, ever changes. So one of the really useful things about this knowledge is that, you know, oftentimes we try and help people, don't we? And then something bad goes, that's right. Now, I mean, you know, for instance, you might see somebody who's on the street with you and they're asking you for money. Right? You go, oh, yeah, I've got some money, sure. Right? And you think, okay. May I bring about the perfection of generosity for all sentient beings? Here's some money, mate. They turn around, they go straight off to the pub, or they go off and buy some drugs, and they have an accident or they die. And you think, what? Geez, well, I hadn't given them that money, that wouldn't have happened. A wrong thought, mistake. That's not the cause of their death or drunkenness, all that sort of stuff. Those are called bad effects, aren't they? You just did something good. How can something good produce something bad? It doesn't. There's other causes for what happened to them. They're not your causes. They're not the causes you created. So this is that could be quite useful to identify correctly what a cause of something good is, what a cause of something bad is. But it's very easy to slip off to the effect and think, oh, that's the karma I created. You go, no, no, no. And I see this is where it often begins with these four karmic principles. I can see it takes a bit of time to sort of work it through. Now, I've sort of thought of what happened there. So today I'm going to look at the mental karmas that Ruby was wondering about. And I'm going to look at the four results of a mental karma. And I've used these books to present the material. Now, probably the easiest book to read about this material is in The Foundation of Buddhist Practice. But like I said, over here, Steps on the Path to Enlightenment. That's a thick book. It's about like that thick. It's just about karma. And what I'm explaining in this class is nothing like what's in that book. I'm presenting material that has to answer questions that the FPMT wants you to know. They want you to know this material so you know the answers. It's sort of like the basic presentation of karma, cause and effect. But this Steps on the Path to Enlightenment, like I said, is maybe 400 odd pages, between 400 and 500 pages. And it goes into it in a lot of depth and in many topics I can't present in our classes. Like, for instance, about the strength of an act, the weight of an act. Which acts will I not experience, even though I create the cause? Well, there's a lot of material there. It's incredibly interesting and useful. But we can't cover it in this class. And then, of course, Samsara, Nirvana, and Buddha nature, again by the Dalai Lama and Venerable Thupten Chodron. They're easy to read, but they're very deep. And, you know, I find myself, you can read like a paragraph and have to stop because there's a lot to think about, right? You start looking at that, reading that material and look at your own way of being, You have pause, right? Then you sort of start thinking about it. So let's begin with this one. This quote from the Buddha is from a text called A Collection of Indicative Verses. I'll give you a chance to read it, and I'll read it out loud to you. So as you can see, the verse says, do not think. The small misdeeds will not follow me later. Just as a large pot is filled by water, falling drop by drop, the immature being is completely filled up by misdeeds, accumulated a bit at a time. So I've told you that story, haven't I, about my tap dripping. It's like that, right? You think it's just a drop of water. A week later, it's $60. It's more than a drop of water. And it's just a drop, just a little thing. It's like us, right? Little things take place and we don't think anything of it. You know, so what? So the thing about this is, so the immature being is completely filled up. But think about the mature being is also completely filled up by drops of virtue, little things at a time. To be able to smile at somebody to increase their happiness, right? You have to hop on the buses, public transport, the bus driver says, good morning. Everybody feels, oh, good, right? Just those few words made somebody feel good. Imagine if you did that and decided to become a Buddha, I need to speak well. I'll speak well and help increase people's happiness. His Holiness often said, just smile. That's a small act. But imagine if your intention behind your smile was to bring all beings to Buddhahood. That's the greatest virtue you could ever accumulate, create just by smiling. It's small actions. Anyway. Something to think about, so hard to do. So let's have a look. So I've got some sort of tables here and some other things. You would have seen this in the previous class, but we'll go through it again. So we're looking at the results of a karma. So there are, how it's presented differently in different texts. I'll present it the simplest way, which is just there are three. Yeah? So we go first one, is the fruitional result. The fruitional result is like the complete effect. That complete effect, it's complete because the four parts of the action are all being completed. It's like you've got a lovely, perfect seed to produce something. It's met all the right conditions, and now it's a fruit. These fruitional results are the kind of life form you take. So our fruitional result is what? Yeah, we're humans. That's the fruit. We're born the fruit of becoming a human being. Is that fruit virtuous? Is its cause virtuous or non-virtuous? You never say virtuous, do you? We're here and we can put an end to suffering. That's a big deal. Any being beneath us can't. Right? So this is a great result. We need to have this result. Until we're enlightened, we need this result again and again and again. Right? And so as humans, you can read Dharma, understand it, think about it, meditate upon it, put it into suffering. It's the best sort of result we could have, and we've got it. That rebirth result, or the form of life you take, is called a fruitional result. If we looked outside and saw a cat or a dog, that's also a fruitional result. And it's the life form they've got. If you ask, is that the result of a virtue or a non-virtue? You'd have to say it's a result of a non-virtue. Is that life form is lesser, lower than ours? They can't read. They can't study. They can't meditate. There's no way they can understand emptiness. Not only that, think about it. But we've got all these means of avoiding suffering. Animals have very few means. But if you look back, you go, okay, the result, that's the cause of that was a non-virtue. They have this fruitional result. Now let's look to the next type of result. So these are called results corresponding to the cause. And there are two of them here. The first is what they call the behavioral result. So as a human, We tend to repeat similar behaviors. Now, this, if you just look over at your life, you see this is just a fact, right? Do something that works, you do it again. Whether it's, you know, virtuous or non-virtuous. So if we look at this in terms of non-virtuous behavior, so we know, okay, we've created virtue and non-virtue and behaviors all throughout our lives. But we're human now. That's the result of virtue. We've got a good result. But we find ourselves lying often to get what we want, to please people, to get our way. Like you yell at why? Well, because we've done this before. This is what worked for us, and we're doing it again. So now, even though we've got this lovely form of the human being, we're creating causes for future unhappiness, aren't we? So that we might not end up as a human being again. This is our lie. If the lie is strong enough, deep enough, hard enough, imagine if we lie to our spiritual master, our teacher, we trust them. But for some reason or other, we like to appear better than we are, so we tell them lies. So this is like, it seems to be quite a heavy non-virtue. Or imagine you're up in the spiritual community and you tell lies in such a way that the community broke apart. Now, that's a heavy lie. Then there's going to be some sort of effect that's going to happen similar to us, which is called the experiential effect. Now, something bad is going to happen to us. So I had an experience, something like this the other day, and it was really great. I mean, it was great that I could actually go, oh my gosh, here we go. So imagine, so have you ever had the experience where somebody has said something to you and you have understood it to mean something other than what they intended? Well, I'm sure we all have, right? So, for instance, somebody could say, something to you without any harshness or ill meaning or ill intent. It's just they say something to you, and you fly off the handle. Right? You get really upset by that, right? And then you say harsh words back to them. What sort of meaning could you take away from it? If you look back at your own behavior, what could you be thinking about yourself, your own behavior? One thing you should think straight away is that person there is not the cause of my reaction. That's the first thing you know. One of the reasons for that is, if this person was the actual substantial cause for my reaction, they'd have to turn into my reaction. They don't. They stay right there. You change. Something happened in your mind changed. What's the cause of that? So my take on this was when they didn't say anything nasty to me. They just said these words and I got cranky. I take, well, wow, as a human being, so I'm really upset. I must have caused upset in other people's minds myself. Now I experience the effect. I have to get an experience similar to something I did. Like I said, they didn't intend to harm me with their speech. They just said something that I didn't like. Right? I thought it meant, this is, you're not talking to me like that, blah, 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 because this is what it means. And they said, no, I didn't mean that at all. Right? I mean, this is what happens to us sometimes, doesn't it? You hear things, you think it means this. In fact, it doesn't mean that at all. You get up, worked up about it, you respond. What was the cause of that? What's the cause of this distress you're feeling? Yeah.
It's just a self-grasping, isn't it?
That's the deepest cause is a misapprehension of who you are and how you exist. From that deep misapprehension, comes thoughts and behaviors, doesn't it? So what are the behaviors? It could be something of similar type. Mm. I've harmed people with my speech. That's why I'm being upset by your speech. That's the experience. But what's really good about this is that you can work against it. Now, unless it was the other person's fault, what could you do?
Kill them.
That's right. And people do, eh? They decide to kill them all, right? I won't have any problems, but it's not their fault. Yeah, that's right, Sandy. That's the common solution, isn't it? Let's just get rid of them. Or I'm leaving you. Right? I'm walking out the door. You know, we always put the blame in the wrong place.
So we're mistaking the cooperative condition for a substantial cause.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's what we do. Right? So, like I said, so other people say these words, they're contributing. In what way? Well, they said the words. Did they intend to harm you? No. But I heard the words. So I'm making it all up. Well, why? How come? I don't want to hurt myself. I don't want to be upset, but I am. Why? How? No, that was just true to us. If I thought it was untrue, I wouldn't be upset. But I think it's true. Why? So karma explains the why and the how. And like I said, results corresponding to the cause. My upsetness. We've got to look back at ourselves. If the other person's not the substantial, if they're contributing, great, okay. But a substantial cause turns into the effect. The effect for me is distress. The cause must be something distressful that I have done. This is the power. If you understand this, yes, it's unpleasant to feel the distress. It's not a nice thing to hear other people using the language. But you've got to admit to yourself, I'm out of control. First noble truth, we're not in control here. Do you want to be in control? You betcha. I don't like getting people who like me the same kind words to me, and I'm getting upset at them. So we've got to look back at ourselves, right? And when we say it, then you've got to go, gosh, I've got to stop speaking harshly to people, because this is the effect. Someone speaks kindly to me, I hear harshness. I respond as if they're being harsh. Yeah, they call it karmic appearance. Like I said, you know, it's a really unpleasant thing to happen, and we do this. Like I said, the good thing is when you start tracking it back, you can start going, oh my gosh, I play a big part in this. I'm responsible for my suffering. What can I do? Because we can do something. It's not that we experience it in this, I'm a terrible person. We don't need to go down the rabbit hole of guilt and blame of ourselves either. It's just, no, they're just delusions, right? They just got hold of me and I'm flipped out. So if I want to stop it, I have to speak kindly. Like in this instance, because I was harsh speech, what's the opposite of harsh speech? What kind speech? Okay. I have to start speaking more kindly. I've got to put the causes back in. So actually, I actually hear kindness because I think kindly and I speak kindly. And then, of course, there are the environmental results. So this is what they call the effect on your external world and circumstances. Well, imagine, like in my case, where people are being kind and are speaking nicely, but you're hearing blame, you know, pointy fingers at you. Like, I'll tell a story. Right? So one day, my brother went home. So we don't often go home because our way we were brought up. So my brother goes home and he knocks on the door of my dad's house, and the door is just wrenched open, and there's my father there with a red face and going, blah! You know, yelling, and then he sees it's my brother. He goes, I thought it was those religious nuts. So he hears, when the door knocks, he hears the sound of a door knocking and imagines immediately there are religious nuts behind that door. And his face gets inflamed and he's angry. Nobody to help with that. This is my brother coming home to see how you are, Dad. But this happens to us too. That's just my dad, right? You make stuff up. Right? What's the cause? Well, there's two here. We tend to repeat similar behaviors. And as a human, we experience similar circumstances to what we created for others in the past. And of course, it's the fact, right? So like the fact, like, yeah, my dad just sees people out there going to give them a hard time. All these plenty of people walking on our streets that think the world is against them. So here's the four results of a non-virtuous karma. We always go fruition of results, results corresponding to the cause and the environment. These are three, but fruition results are the kind of life form you take. We know that. In terms of a non-virtuous karma, it'll be the hell realms, the hungry ghosts, or the animals. So if the action is fully complete, all four parts of the actions are complete, and it's heavy enough, this is what happens to you in terms of your fruitional result. In terms of the results corresponding to the cause, of course, as again, we tend to repeat similar behaviors, similar circumstances, always the same, and the effect on your external world and circumstances, on the places you live, the persons you meet, and the general atmosphere. So it's interesting, I read or heard somebody say, the whole Buddhist, Buddhism, it's just cause and effect. If you look at the Four Noble Truths, it's cause and effect on both sides. One is, here's the effect called suffering, here are the causes. On the other side, here's the effect when you put an end to the causes of suffering. And this is how you do it. Here's your path. It's cause and effect, cause and effect. Everything is cause and effect. And there are many different types of causes that we talk about. The major ones are what they call contributory and substantial. If you just get your head around that and go substantial causes, that's to do with me. Everyone else is contributory. The weather contributes. The persons contribute. They're not the main cause. The main cause has to do with me, my own karma and my own delusions. That's creating my suffering. My good activities, they create my happiness. That's why you can't make anybody happy. Other people have to make themselves happy. We're all trying to, but we're not too good at it. Now, in terms of the mind, as you asked me, there are three types of actions that produce suffering for us. So here's two guys that do a lot of talking, and they do a lot of thinking, and they do a lot of acting, right? And they're not bringing a great deal of happiness to the world we live in. So think of these three guys and think, do these guys have these three mental states, right? One is covetousness. Do they want the things that other people have? And we might find we're not quite as bad as they are, but we want things that others have too. So this is called covetousness. It's desiring what belongs to others. You think, like, oh, I want it. It often involves a strong attachment to possessions. And it often comes up when you repeatedly contemplate about what the other has and how you'd like to have it. So that's one. The other is called some malice. So that's where you want to harm others, you wish harm upon others. So these guys, you've heard them speak, right? You know they really want that. They'll say it too, you know. And lastly, what's called wrong views. So there are, in this category, there are five specific wrong views they talk about, but we're not going to go there. We're just going to let you know. There are plenty of wrong views you can have that will hurt yourself and others too when you act upon them. So one of the worst wrong views, of course, is denying the importance of having a spiritual guide. But we need help, right? There isn't anybody that gets through this world alone and goes, here I am, this brilliant wise guy. You know, everyone needs help. We need a friend. And then, of course, from a Buddhist perspective, it's all cause and effect. Right? So if you discount cause and effect, a lot of problems follow. If you discount the idea of past and future lives or the Four Noble Truths, there's lots of different things you can have a wrong view about. It's just the wrong view, like a wrong idea, but you think it's true. And you know, you'll talk about it, you've got to act on it too. So these are the three major ones I've sort of sorted out. A simple thing you can do about these wrong views is at the end of the day or at any time during the day, you might just stop and go, is there anything I've been coveting in the last couple of hours? Yeah, no. About malice, is one you really want to hurt or thought they should be hurt or destroyed or killed or something bad should happen to them? Yeah, well, maybe. I don't know. You know, oftentimes stuff happens like that. Oh man, like, you know, you don't want those people to be around. You know, because they're so nasty, the things they're doing. So it can be, you can have a sort of malice towards them. You wish, sometimes you think, oh, I'd love you to be hurt like you hurt others. Well, that's malice. And of course, these are wrong views. Now, in terms of the heaviest of the karmas, the heaviest mental negative karma is the wrong views. Because it's from a view your behavior follows. From the view you start to speak about your view, or you act upon it. And so your actions, your body and speech follow your ideas. It says, unlike physical or verbal negative actions, mental karmas, like wrong view, are accumulated the moment they arise in the mind without requiring any physical completion. You know, you can't, you have it, it's done. This makes them particularly dangerous as they can occur instantly and repeatedly. And this is why it's so important to die with a good mind, right? Because oftentimes, yeah, you're going to end up in that bed, you might not say very much. You won't be hurting anybody with your arms and legs or stealing from them or engaging in any sex with anybody, right? You're too crook, right? But you could be lying in that bed thinking the worst sort of thoughts and then die. That's not the way to go. We've got to avoid that. Because this last moment of conception is really important at the time of death. That's going to lead into the fruition of karma. The fruit of that thought. Well, it's next life, isn't it? Well, it was coming real soon. So I put up these results of the mental non-virtues first, and we'll have a look at some of the results of mental virtue. So, of course, the ripening result is always lower rung. That's nice and simple. In terms of the causal and concordant behavioral result, it means the tendency for similar behavior. Everyone knows that this is how it is in terms of habit formation, right? Our habits are just an action you do again and again. It's these next one, the causal and concordant experiential results that are really important. So it might be not so easy to read it, but also I'll say it out to you. So in terms of covetousness, you know, wanting the things that others have. But in other words, you have intense desires and cravings. You never complete projects and your ventures fail. That's because you're always moving on to the next thing that you want. Or you get what you want, but it's not enough. It never is. In terms of malice, of course. So again, you can look at this. If you find yourself with great fears, suspicions, guilts, all these things, just think, that's what you help create in the minds of other people. That's what you've done, and now you experience the result. Anybody here read the biography of Stalin? Yeah, so that was one paranoid guy. He was scared, and no one killed him. But it's just like you say, Sandy, right? I'm so scared, like, I got to get him. And so he did. And so his own paranoia drives him to become a great mass murderer, one of the largest murderers in history. There's a number of people who've been like that, right? And I remember the story. So at the time of Stalin's death, just before he died, well, he had a stroke. And I remember him reaching up like that in terror and looking up like that, seeing something. And everybody was so scared to treat him. No one treated him, right? That's why he died. He had the stroke, they could have treated him, but no one, everyone was too scared to, because they thought, shit, maybe he's going to kill us, right? So nobody did anything, and of course, passed away. Yeah, so I was thinking about this. Now, this is a great little chart, you know, because you can look, you grab something like that, you can just go, well, you know, often you forget this material. It's hard to hold with so much material. If you get a little slide like that, put it up somewhere, you can just look back, oh, this is what goes on in me. What's causing it? You know, the other person contributes, but what's the deepest cause? You can find, gosh, it's stuff. You know, you don't say, I, Angela, did this in past lives, right? Or I, Eddie, did this in past lives. You weren't Angela, you weren't Eddie then. There was a person on this thing called a mental continuum that created all this negative stuff. Just like we are on it now, and we're doing positive and negative stuff. If someone's going to experience the result of that, it's going to be us, but not as we are now, in another rebirth. We're going to be the people that experience what we do. That's how it works. So I know there's a lot of interesting. Anything you'd like to say or ask? If you want me to go back that slide or think about it a little bit, whatever, I will. Yes, that's right. And that's fine. So the idea is either to have that challenged. The biggest challenge for most of us is that we just think in terms of one lifetime. That I'm just here, I got born here, there was no past life. But if you take that view, you go, okay, then why the big difference in people? Why does it take that two babies can be born and one turns out to be killing things really quickly and the other doesn't? What's the cause here? They haven't been treated badly. You know, it's not always the case. There have been instances, for instance, of what you call psycho killers, right? These people that go out and murder a lot of people. They haven't had really bad lives. What's the cause? You can't just, you know, like, it's a big problem for Western psychology, isn't it? So it's like, no cause. That's impossible too. Yeah, but the faith or the conviction has to come out of reasoning.
Yeah.
It's got to be reasoned. Oh, yeah, for sure. Not only your eyes, but our society itself says it. We're born into this life and that's it. We've started. Right. Somewhere along the line, then they'll say, yeah, and when you die, we ask, hey, where did I come from? What's going to happen when I die? And so people say things to you, and you either believe it or you don't. Yeah, it's quite challenging, Sandy. It's a complete shift of worldview, the Buddha presentation, for sure. In fact, I was talking to someone yesterday about this. So I noticed, so there's a thing that happened a long, long time ago, saying that most of Western culture is based on Greek thought. That's our history of thinking. And during that time, there were a number of different Greek philosophers all trying to work out how do things exist, right? Just like they are now. So one of them was this guy called Heraclitus. And he said this amazing thing. He said, you cannot step into the same river twice. So what that meant was that everything is in flux. There is nothing stable. From moment to moment, it's all flux and change. So that's what he said. Plato came along and said that things had an essence. And he created one of the things that it was the atomic theory, right? So these things are real. They're not in flux. They're stable. The Greeks at that time poo-pooed Heraclitus and adopted Platonic thought. The West come along and did the same. In the East, they went with Heraclitus. They never heard of him. But the Buddha, they heard of him, of course, and he talked about the same thing. Everything is in flux. There isn't anything stable. They went with that. So we've got a Western view stemming from Greek philosophy, and we've also got the Eastern view stemming from the Buddha. But some time ago, this is a philosophical Nagarjuna, seemed like the second Buddha. And the Buddha said, when Nagarjuna comes along, he's going to write my teachings. This is the guy. So what happened? The Buddha gave his teachings, and the Buddhist philosophers went along like Plato. They started looking for dharmas, real things. Beneath everything, there's got to be something real. They called it a dharma. Nagarjuna came along and blew the whole thing out of the water. He went back to the southern guys and said, there is no essence in anything. If there is, we should be able to find it. Let's look. So, of course, they don't find anything. At the very same time that Nagarjuna was around, a Greek philosopher called Pyrrho was there with Alexander's people. So if you look at that, in Greek philosophy, there's the same sort of thing that Nagarjuna put across. But it's like they never accepted it. So the knowledge was there, but it didn't become common knowledge. So at our times now, there are scientific philosophers, and they write down in some atomic theory land, aren't they? What do you call that type of quantum physics, right? So that's been known for over 100 years. Has it been adopted generally by everybody? No way. No, we're still back in the 18th century using that type of science. Yeah. And they said, so what's going to happen? The story is, well, they have to die. That's what normally happens. Then the new philosophies are accepted and adopted. Generally, you know. This is just the way it goes. But it all comes down to what you say, that you have to be willing to question. To question the orthodoxy of the time. Our orthodoxy is the scientific materialism, isn't it? One life. What's it mean? We have no idea. We don't answer that question. It has no meaning whatsoever. It's just how things happen. It's just blah, blah, blah. There's one life. They don't discuss mind. They have no instruments to measure. No, we just deal with the physical. That's how well we live in. That's my rant. Buddhism like really challenges that. But like I said, it could have been challenged with it. When I look at Pyrrho's little thing with Nagarjuna, I went, oh my God, they're the same. Like, geez, who influenced who here? You know? But then I read later on, of course, it doesn't require that. Sometimes two people can have the same thought in different parts of the world. They never meet each other. They don't have to. At the very same time, and things change. But they're adopted. Let's do a meditation. I'll be wrapping. We're going to run out of time. Please settle down. Okay. Just let your body become still. And let your breath find its natural rhythm. So you reach exhalation, distraction is vanishing. So recollect now those three mental non-karmas. The three non-virtuous mental karmas. There was covetousness, then there was malice, and then there were wrong views. And of them all, wrong views are the heaviest. These wrong views deny karma. They deny rebirth. They deny spiritual truth. They're the most severe mental non-virtues because they sever the connection to virtue. These wrong views and mental non-virtues are like a poisoned river flowing through the landscape of the mind. At its source, the waters are tainted with ignorance. Ignorance severs the connection to truth. So karma and ignorance pollute everything. They twist our perceptions, they distort our realities, they instantly generate a negative karma. So how might you recognize wrong views when they arise in your own mind? You can begin by noticing when you dismiss the consequences of harmful thoughts or actions. So what's the fourfold pattern of suffering these mental non-virtues create? Well, they bring an unfortunate rebirth. They create hostile environments. They cause recurring pain and they establish entrenched habits. So what can we do to apply this understanding to the way we're living today? Well, let's begin by just watching the way we think with a sense of gentle awareness. Try to recognize that each mental state plants seeds or causes for future experiences. And decide to purify the waters of the mind by cultivating the right view. And breathing in through your nostrils, breathe out and relax. Okay, again, so we begin with a quote again from the Buddha. And so I'll read it out to you. He says, when the eagle soars up high above the earth, its shadow for the while is nowhere to be seen. Yet bird and shadow are still linked. So too our actions. When conditions come together, their effects are clearly seen. So is anybody confused by this quote or do you understand it? So let's look then at the four results of a virtuous karma. So again, it's always a fruitional result, right? That's the rebirth result. And remember, it always requires the four parts of the action have to be complete. They have to be heavy enough to create this fruitional result or strong enough. So in terms of virtuous karma, again, it's the kind of life form you take. And here are the types of life form you can take when it's virtuous. You can be reborn in what they call the form and formless realm as a deva there. Deva is just another word for like a godlike existence. Now, this dharma existence has to be created by you now. And it requires karma binding. You've got to have that. That's what the major cause of this is. Because with the strength of karma binding, you cannot create non-virtue with that mind. It's just placed on a virtuous object and it stays there. That's how strong that mind is. So it cannot create non-virtuous thoughts. When you're under that power, you can't create non-virtuous thoughts. So if you think this is a bit of woo-woo, just look at your own life. And remember, when you're really focusing on something, the other thoughts, like when you're in it, nothing else can get in there. You ever have, you know, when you're really in a good book or a good movie or in a great piece of music, right? You're absorbed in it, right? While you're in it, you're not out of it. So this is, it's like this, like while you're in this deep state of meditation, you cannot be distracted off into thinking about anything. It's impossible. In fact, you can remain there, let's say if you can do this, 3 hours, as holiness says. If you can place your mind in this calm abiding state for 3 hours, you got it. No non-mention can be there. It's a neutral mind, or a mind that's placed upon a virtuous object and just stays there. Just rest on it. So imagine doing that again and again, and then you come to dying, right? You know you're dying. Now, great, now what do? Place it in that state. And you die like that. Rebirth, now you're there, right? You get a result just like the cause. So this is called the desire arms, but again, it's a bit more coarse, but the same effect. And finally, of course, is you become human. You die with a virtuous mind. Your mind, that's what it focused on. Because you know about this stuff. You go, man, I don't want to have any fear or paranoia or crazy thing can happen when I'm dying. No, thank you. But you know the effects. And you're in this life, you've done your best to not let that happen, you know? You've calmed yourself down, you've rested, you've thought good stuff. And you do it again. Yeah, okay, now it's a bit more important. That's what I'll do. Let's say you get the fruitional result. So obviously we've done it, because here we are. So don't give up. Don't think it's impossible, because you've already achieved it. You want to do it again, that's the thing. Now the causally concordant results. Results corresponding to the cause. So as a human, you tend to repeat these behaviors. So if you're a kind person now, if you're training in kindness, that's exactly what you do on your deathbed. You do it as often as you possibly can. A real simple thing to do about it is to give yourself confidence is just think badly of an object and see what happens to you. Find all the reasons to dislike it, blah, 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 and watch what happens. What do you think will happen? Is it going to be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Unpleasant, usually is, isn't it? No one does that sort of thing and go, yeah, it was really great. Right? Yeah, no, it's like you get the results, right? Negative thinking makes you suffer, makes it really unpleasant for you. So you do that, and then you go, now change your mind and look at the object again, and now think all the great thoughts about it. What can you think about that's really good? And you do. And then what's the effect on you? Are you more unhappy now? No. Of course not, because the effect corresponds to your cause. You can't think happy things about someone and then turn up, what was that like? I hated them. It doesn't work like that. So just a simple thing like that to give you confidence, oh my God, it's true. I think well, I experienced something good, I feel good. Yeah, that's what you want to take into your death. Right? You want to take a virtuous mind, this pleasant, good feeling mind, virtue. Or a die like that. Not happy. So this is anybody see the movie Little Big Man? So this is great scene, that's not the beginning, right? Right along, he's up on he's on his death pyre. And you know, the Indian says it's a good day to die today. Right? I'm going to sing my death song. So he sings this great death song. You know? So he's like, then it starts to rain. And he stops immediately and goes, maybe it's not such a good day to die today. He gets down from the death pyre and wanders off. But I like that attitude, you know, like singing to death. Right? Go into it courageously. Go into it with virtue. That's all the courage you need. And there's lots of objects of virtue that you can think of. And so then, of course, you'll get a similar result. Yeah, so this, from my perspective, it's like the thing of, we are responsible for our own happiness and our own suffering. And if you take on that responsibility, you should be able to decrease your suffering and increase your happiness once you know the causal process. That's the whole point of talking about cause and effect, to learn the process and then interfere with it. Okay, when I think like this, my life's crap. When I think like this, it's much better. You know, I'll give you a quick story, a short one. So many years ago, I was a baddie, silly fellow. Got myself into lots of trouble. The effect of my criminal creativity was to end up in jail. And I met all these other guys that were in jail who'd done just the same as me. And they were really all unhappy, and I was really happy. I was happy to go to jail because now I could stop doing what I was doing. It was the only way to stop myself. And I decided, when I go to jail, I'm going to do this thing. Jail's the perfect place for me to do it. I'll be fed, I've got shelter, there's a library. I can work out why, what's the purpose of my life. Well, I was glad to be there. These other guys weren't. And that was the difference. They weren't glad to be there, I was glad to be there. And I remember them saying to me, what's wrong with you? don't you know where you are? This is what this guy said to me, and I think he goes, they know exactly where I am, and that's why I'm happy. So it's just your attitude. If you don't like it, if you resent it, guess what happens to you? You get a crappy life, you know? In fact, a couple of those guys killed themselves. That's what they did. They hated it so much that they were in jail, they killed themselves. And they go, yeah, that's what happens. You don't like your life, you don't like where you are. That's what people could do. And they did. You don't have to, right? So yeah, again, it's the thing. This is where, like, this is our... This word responsible, right? The response. What's your response? You want to create more crap in your life, or you want to decrease it? You want to feel better about your life? You know, if you read books and watch movies, you see lots of instances like that, don't you? You know, two people lying in the hospital bed, same sickness, one happy, one unhappy. Why? You go, sinking. Same here, you know, while we're alive, we're going to be thinking. Well, we're going to be thinking all the way up to our death. What's the last thought you want to have? Think about it and decide, become familiar with it, right? Like, think about it now. You know, now that's traditional. We're talking about what's the best thought we can have? Somebody tell me, what's the best thought you can have? You all know. Most of you know. Tell me. That's right. I'm going to become enlightened for the benefit of all human beings. That's my purpose for living. It's the best thought you can create, right? Right at the time of your death, that's the thought. Yeah. Because you know, if life doesn't finish, it goes on. Right? That's the best thought you want to take with you. The most virtuous thought you can think. So, well, in fact, it's going to be great. It might not be to be enlightened, but you'll certainly end up as a human being. This is a virtuous thought. It's a virtuous last thing. And of course, environmental results, these are also called the results possessed by yourself as a human. So the effect on the external world and circumstances, places we live, persons you meet, and the general atmosphere. Here's our last one, results of virtuous mental karma. So again, it's always higher realms, right? With non-virtuous, lower, virtuous, it's higher. That's the fruit, ripened result. However, as a human being, you have these tendencies. For instance, when I was growing up, my parents always made me say please and thank you. It might be the same for you. Right? So you start to say that as a kid, don't you? And you don't lose it because it becomes a habit. It's the same now, but we want to create mental habits that we keep doing. You know, sometimes it used to be also a thing that if you're sitting on public transport and a woman came in or you stood up, you offered them your seat. Right? It's mental stuff, right? But it drives the behavior. It's just a habit you get used to as a kid. It's the same now. Yeah, so like I said, so non-attachment, well, reduction in suffering, of course, follows. In fact, joy arises and contentment. If you don't feel malice, it's the sin of non-hatred. So no aversion, no ill will, no fear, no guilt, no suspicion, no fright or paranoia. Sense of well-being. So I look at, you know, I look at the lamas like Geshe Zopa and Lama Zopa, and you think of what those guys are doing. Right? Even if you can be some of the great Dharma women practitioners from that area of the world, right? It's only training, right? Because they just got a cause and effect. It's just cause and effect. Right? You do, like I said, the karma is definite in that if you think good stuff happens to you. I don't think people do good stuff, they might do, but inside you, you're good. You're good to go. There's this great, like I said, the role, karma is definite. The idea is to take away from it. Good follows good. The bad follows the bad. The negative creates the negative. The positive creates the positive. Virtue creates happiness. Non-virtue creates suffering. That's the definite thing. And apply it to yourself. Right? Like I said, experiment. Just think badly of something and see what happens to you. You don't need any other condition, you just need this cause of going bad, bad, bad. You get depressed, you get upset, blah, blah, blah. No one's doing it to you but yourself, isn't it? You're doing it all. You're creating it all through your thoughts. You want the opposite? You have to do the opposite. You pick up, eh? That's right. That's right. If that's what happens to you, you can walk into rooms and you pick up a vibe, don't you? You're like, oh man, I don't want to be in here. You pick up something nasty or malevolent or something creepy.
It's kind of double.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so this is the same thing with the karma, the actions of body and speech. So you hurt the other, you hurt yourself. Mentally, you can't. You really hurt them, but you can certainly influence others through your thinking. That's proven again and again. And people can feel it too, you know. It's like, whoa, okay. But the person who mainly feels it, that's you. You're going to get the major effect. So let's finish off on our last meditation. Again, just be comfortable. Drop your thoughts. Settle your body. Drop your shoulders. Let the body breathe itself. And recollect that every action you perform, plants seeds or potentials that will ripen into corresponding fruits across lifetimes if they are not interfered with. So recollect how your choices to act can create four cascading effects. The first is a determined future rebirth. What was that result called? They can create matching experiences, or they can establish behavioral patterns. Now, what was that result called? That was the causally concordant result. And they also shape your environment. We're just like a gardener tending the soil in the garden. Those daily actions cultivate the conditions for the future well-being of the garden. We need the same. Our daily choices, from small acts of kindness to moments of impatience, they shape the person that we are becoming. So what would change if you truly understood that every harmful word and thought creates tendencies to repeat that harm across lifetimes? So So recognizing this, you know, be conscious and choose kindness. Kindness is good for you. Kindness is good for others. So choose that kindness. And now breathing in through your nostrils. Exhale, with your eyes closed open. We've come to the end of our class. So the takeaway today is like you do that with four results, right? You put up the three categories, but there are four. And there are these three non-virtuous and three virtuous mental karmas. It's covetous, malice, and wrong views, and there are their opposites. Non-attachment, non-hatred, and non-ignorance. And finally, you've got this exercise where you should just stop at different times during the day and just ask yourself, what's your mind been doing for the last hour or so? Okay, so you read some material on this on the LTC notes up online now, pages 21 to 24, 31 to 36. And next week we're talking about this throwing karma and completing karma. So we talked about this fruitional result. To get that, this karma has to get there, right? To have that. So here we are. But to be as human, this is the fruitional result. It's called the karma that throws you into having this result. We're going to talk about that next week. And then the other type of karma is called completing karma. And we'll talk about that. So we'll look at the differences between them, and I'll give an example of it. Okay, so it's, I know this is pretty heavy material, a lot to think about, that's for sure. So I'll just say thank you for attending the classes and just having it covered and thinking about it, you know. It makes a difference to your life, a good difference, well, great. Hope it will. So, yeah, this material has come down for centuries, and it's been adopted by many people, and they've worked with it, it's really helped them. So may it be the same for us, and by the benefits that we experience, we share it with others. But join me in saying, due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel, bodhicitta, not yet born and rise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, may I too remain to dispel the sorrows of the world. The wish granted, wish fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, to the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech. May all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And finally, the prayer for the finding of Rinpoche's reincarnation. In holding and spreading the Moody's precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience and have never discouraged incomparable venerable guru to you. I make this request.